The NHL staged rookie showcases across the league that saw three teams get together in a host city to put rookie against rookies to see who was the rookiest of them all. This year, the Colorado Avalanche hosted the rookie showcase for the San Jose Sharks and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. These showcases feature a collection of NHL rookies, hopeful amateurs, and prospects looking to make a team anywhere. Aside from a handful of Avs rookies who are either in the NHL or on the doorstep of the NHL, the rest of the roster has something to prove and plenty of eyes on them as they tried to prove it. As I walked up to the arena, a line of diehard Avs fans had already formed outside. I was there at 11:30 for a 2 p.m. game, and there were people lined up already to get in. Honestly, I wasn't even sure I was going to get in once I saw that line because I had to go to the bar, and not just for drinks, but to meet up with one of my favorite people in the world, AJ Hapley, because I had questions. I'd never been to a showcase before. I wasn't entirely sure how this went, what to expect, what do people get out of this, who's going to be there, why the Avs even do such a thing. But before we get into any of that, read a little tune. Like to hear it? Here it go.
Yeah, huge shout out to the AVS fam. Colorado hockey's coming in, man. Let me teach you how to dutchie. On the ice, the dutchie touch. Hashtag volley volley. The crazy saves this so gnarly. The Condor and Landy. Team Butte is sweeter than candy. Colorado hockey's coming in. Colorado hockey for the win. Tune into the podcast, we're live. Colorado hockey has arrived.
This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast brought to you by AvsFam, absfam.com, for the coolest hockey shirts you can't find anywhere else because they're not available anywhere else. They're only at AvsFam. Go check them out right now, absfam.com. Captain's Log, September 17th, 2016. Typically at this time of year, we have hockey in the form of training camp, rookie training camp. We don't have hockey in the form of World Cup of Hockey and the Avs hosting the Rookie Showcase, both which are awesome, but unfortunately, often at the same time. What the hell, NHL? Now, while I have to admit that had the North America team been playing at the same time as the Avs, I'm not sure what I would have done, but luckily North America didn't play until right about now, where they are killing Finland right now, by the way. Nathan MacKinnon's already got one goal in this game, and earlier in the day, Gabriel Landeskog put one in the net as well. That's a good day to be an Avs fan. But I digress. As I mentioned in the preamble, I sat down with AJ Hafley in a bar to have a conversation about hockey and rookie showcases, and this is what it sounded like. Actually, the sound could be a little bit better, so I'll apologize for that now. But as usual, we jump in the middle of a conversation.
What is the point of this? I mean, I've seen a lot of other showcases going on. Like, yesterday I saw, like, four guys, I think, in Chicago got booted out of the game. Like, it seems like a pretty serious thing, where I thought it was more of like a burgundy and blue, but with another team.
Right. It's kind of supposed to be in between, but then you get guys that are out there on ATOs. Like, this is their chance.
There's
like,
a couple.
They're not going to go out there and they're not going to, you know, they're not going to dick around. This is their chance to impress an NHL team or multiple NHL teams. Because they've got scouts from multiple teams sitting here.
I was going to ask you about that. Who is this for, really? I mean, I get that fans are here and they love it and all that, but is this as much for them or is it more for scouts or
what is the point? Everybody benefits, really. You know, the players on the ice get additional exposure because right now there's one team that gave them an ATO. Like, that is the absolute, like, fringe of professional hockey.
Right? Like a PTO wouldn't even be here, would like, they?
No.
Because they can't. They're not ready.
Right. Yeah. So they'll be there next week. But no, the ATOs, those guys are just trying to get contracts with San Antonio. Like, they're just trying to get noticed for an AHL deal down the line, even. Not even right away, you know? So those are guys that aren't going to take this easy. You know, like, Zadorov, he's going to go out there and he's going to, whatever, he's, you know, he's not going to take this seriously because he doesn't need to.
He doesn't need to exert himself. Right?
He doesn't need to go crazy. He doesn't need to crush anybody. He doesn't need to do any of that. Like, he can just easy breezy, whatever. This is just an extra week of practice for him. But some of these other guys, you know, guys like Brogan O'Brien and Jackson Hawk, like, these guys, this is their life, you know?
Pretty
this
cool
is their
name,
chance.
Right?
So,
okay. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to leave one of these menus with you if you want.
Awesome. So, yeah, like, it's, you know, it's a big thing for these guys. Like, they...
Who's coaching?
Vayu is going to coach today.
Okay.
It'll be, I think, Vayu and Latissour behind the bench, and there might be one other guy.
Okay, we're not going to see, like, the head coach show up.
No, Bednar's no. Bednar's not. He'll be here. I think all the coaches should be here, but they're going to be watching elsewhere. They're going to have a spot somewhere for them.
You were just at the rookie camp started, right? Like, not the showcase, but the camp itself that started?
Yesterday, yeah.
So Bednar's there, obviously?
Yeah, he was there up in the perch.
What's that like? Because it seems like I was reading, it might have been you actually talking about just constant sending the compete message. Like
that was Bayou yesterday, yeah. So he's very loud, and he's very detail-oriented. And doesn't care like how the drill finishes. All he was doing is he was watching specific things at the start of every play. At the start of every drill, he got this and he got that, and it was really, really interesting to watch because Dean Chanel, you know, the last guy, the last AHL coach, was not like that. He wasn't a yeller, wasn't a screamer, and he wasn't really alive. He was just kind of a zombie. He was out there. He didn't really interact a whole lot. They ran the drills. If they didn't do it right, he didn't flip out. He just kind of was there. It was just a stark contrast. And yesterday, all that you wanted, he was like, go. He's like, I want you guys working as hard as you can. Take this seriously. You know, Foot had to pull Zadora out of the side and be like, hey, I need you to take it up just a gear. Like, you don't need to go full bore, but I need you to take this a little more seriously, because he was just out there, and yeah, he's out there fucking around.
That's gonna knock on him
so.
The whole time, though, right? Even in NHL games,
oh yeah. Sometimes he has that. He just does not have that crazy, insane, like, I'm going for this all the time. He's just not wired like that. He's just a laid back kind of goofy and aloof. So nothing wrong with that. I mean, I don't have any issues with him really being like that. Just as long as he grows up a little bit at some point, you know, you're going to need to in the NHL. I can't imagine him being 29 years old and still acting like that. Like,
I don't know, man. I mean, he seems to have so much potential. I feel like his game is one where his partner is going to have a lot to do with his career, I think, whoever he's out there on the ice with, you know? I think he needs somebody in his ear a little bit sometimes.
A little bit, yeah. That was one reason why he worked so well with Beauchemin last year was, you know, because he could kind of get into him a little bit, and he could kind of command that respect, you know, that Z may not have for, like, if he's partnered with Barry or Bigra or somebody, you know. Beauchemin kind of makes him toe the line. He'll scream at him and, you know, get into his ear a little bit.
Have you talked to Beauchemin at all about his minutes last year? Because I think he had the most minutes of any Avs player.
I haven't yet, no.
No?
I mean, he's a tough interview just because he's an old-school vet.
He's Canadian too, isn't he?
He says as little as possible.
Yeah.
Like, that guy is like, you ask him a question, and if it's yes or no, he'll give you yes or no.
I'd be curious to know if he thinks he's been overused or overextended at all. Whereas some people, I don't know what your opinion on it, but I kind of feel like maybe he's overused. I think
he
said this.
By a lot.
Yeah.
By, like, a lot.
But I'm curious to know if he thinks that as well or not. Because it seems like when you look at the guys who got the most criticism, those were the guys with top minutes, most shifts per game. Nick Holden, Ocean, and people like that.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, the criticism's really coming on them. Why were they so heavily used?
Last year, there was not an abundance of options. You couldn't really make a strong argument for, like, you're gonna play Zach Redmond 22 shifts a game. Like,
I didn't think he was gonna find a new team, and he did.
I thought he was gonna get.
I thought he might be back with us, honestly.
About what he did, like, no, he's a tough guy to kind of evaluate because there's. He's replaceable, but he's productive at the same time, so it's...
And even his numbers weren't that bad, right? I mean, if you look, and I know the plus-minus is a weird stat, but if you look at some of those, I think we had 5 guys who weren't a minus, by the way, which is pretty ridiculous. If you look at the people who are in the cup, in the playoffs and all that, plus-minus, they have maybe 5 guys who aren't.
Right.
And then they have 3 or 4 that are, like, maybe 0, right? And everybody else is...
Hello! Fine. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you. Guys need me out for
good? I'm good.
Yeah, I think we're good. Thanks.
You know, it's just one of those things. When your goal differential is bad, it's going to happen.
I don't know. It's a weird thing when you start looking at stats, because you can tell whatever story you want. That's kind of the thing with stats is everyone interprets them differently and, like, what's important to you. So I've been trying to find this great algorithm of, you know, if I looked at just 5 stats, and maybe it's Corsi, I don't know, but something like, how can you get a real feel for the effectiveness on a team? And that's almost specific to one team versus the entire NHL, like every player. Like, for the Avalanche, what's the algorithm? What's the collection of stats that make sense?
Well, it's tough because, I mean, like, there's not... You could pick five stats and still not have what you need. You know, like, you... The advanced stats that we have, that we use, that we, you know, we accept and we widely use, they're still in their infancy. They're baby stats. They're stats that 5 years from now may not be used at all. They may be completely irrelevant. So, I mean, just 2 years ago, it wasn't 5v5. You know, because now when we all talk about this stuff, we all talk about 5v5. We talk about even strength. It was 5v5 in games that were within one goal. So 3-2, 2-1 games. Because the theory was that it was more representative of a true player's ability in a close game, because in games that are separated by two or more goals, you become susceptible to score effects, which is, you know, where one team sits back on a lead a little bit more and the other team is pressing because they need to score, and so you become susceptible to score effects, and that was the whole thing. You know, it was how the whole thing started, and then we went from there. It was somebody started doing the research into it and found that it just wasn't statistically relevant. It wasn't relevant enough for us to continue to proceed that way, so it just went back to even strength. Game situation was irrelevant. It didn't matter, game situation. It was just even strength. So it's the whole thing is just developing. It's evolving. We're still, you know, a year ago we were just learning how to use expected goals for and the expected goal algorithms that have become so prominent now. And I'm a big fan of those because they make a lot of sense to me. They take a lot of actually important data into account. Mm-hmm. It's not just, here are the shots. Like, I get that Corsi matters, but it's not incredibly important in my eyes. Like, it's important when the Avalanche are 43% Corsi team, because that's horrific. Like, it's far and away the worst. That's a huge problem. But the difference between being a 48% Corsi team and a 52% Corsi team, like, it's there, but there are so many other things that are happening in that 4% that it's no longer, like, the dominant story for me.
Right.
So it's tough. You know, I'm not really a numbers guy by nature. I'm not good at math. I don't really like it very much.
It hurts my head.
I use it because it needs to be used. You can't do what I do and blatantly ignore things.
Well, it's just data, right? Like I was saying, everybody grabs it for a different reason, and you can massage it almost any way that you want.
Right.
And so for me, what I'm really getting at when I'm looking for that algorithm and why I'm trying to understand this better is, in my world, everything is about the results, right? It's your metrics for success. If somebody wants something, my first question is, all right, how do I know if I've done it for you? How do I know I did it right? How do I know if I exceeded expectations?
Right.
Like, so if you look down our lineup, like, you can start thinking, like, what does somebody like a Duchene have to do this year to be successful? Of course, everybody wants to win the cup, make the playoffs, do all that shit, right?
Right.
But at the same time, like, just for him, like, what could we point to, three things with him, that would be like, Duchene has improved as a player, or at least didn't regress as a player, mm-hmm. and this is what we would say, like, if halfway through the season he's done this, he's on mark. Like, that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, for Zadorov, I think for him, consistency is one thing.
Yeah.
And also, just not getting that little kind of, that ADD in our own zone, where he just kind of, every now and then he's watching, he loses something, and the guys behind him score.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll happen.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, some of that's maturity, and some of that's just the NHL's off. Tough place to play. So it's hard to find that consistency, because the guys who have it are, like, the best of the best. Like, top flight, you know, hands down, the top guys. Like, entire Team Canada's defensive lineup, more or less.
I saw a stat talking about them today where if you add up the money they all make, their roster is definitely far and above everybody else. North America is about half of that roster. USA, I think, is second or something up there, but... And again, it's just numbers. Take from it what you want. But it's interesting to me that, I don't know, man, this tournament's going to be really fun to watch.
spoiler alert, it was a lot of fun to watch, and I was on my way to go hang out with a bunch of people wearing hockey jerseys in 80-degree weather. The line at this point was nearing the entrance to the Westin Hotel, which was where most of the players were staying. To the credit of the many volunteers who had showed up from the Pepsi Center, it went quick. People were in the door, people were in their seats, and they were ready for hockey long before it even started. The crowd was cheering, the sticks were slapping, the boards were banging, and the pucks were flying. Right into my head. So if you happen to be at the first game against the San Jose Sharks, there was a guy sitting over near the Ducks goalie because the Avalanche were going to attack that zone twice, and the puck went flying up in the air, hit the partition, and dropped right on my head. Now, I've been hit by a lot of hockey pucks in my life, but usually with a helmet on. This one dropped square on my noggin and left a big old bump. And as I was counting the Tweety Birds, this is when I met Roger. Roger's worked for the Pepsi Center, or for a company that works for the Pepsi Center, for about 5 years now. He is a mechanic for Zambonis, and that's pretty damn awesome. If I was that guy, I would have a business card that said, "I fix Zambonis." So Roger comes over and says, "Hey man, you okay?" To which I responded, "I don't know, is my head bleeding?" And he said, "Nah, you just got a big bump on it, you're good to go." And we were the best of friends from that point on. Roger went on to tell me about some of the famous faces that he'd seen around there, including Avs management, ex-players, and even ex-players from the Colorado Rockies hockey days. Again, the staff was really cool through the entire thing, really fun to be around, and Roger's going to be on a podcast here soon, assuming he's real and I didn't just make him up as I was in a daze after getting hit by a puck. We'll see. And then it was time. Yep, that horn can only mean one thing. It's either a fire in the 1950s or the hockey game is about to begin. The Colorado Avalanche were taking on the San Jose Sharks, but they weren't the only hockey players in the building that day. There was a lot of people wearing suits. It looked like a scene out of Men in Black, although half of the crowd was the Men in Black. Most of the Mighty Ducks were in the stands wearing suits that somebody clearly bought for them. There's no way that all these guys are that stylish and that they're that well-tailored. Clearly, the NHL is paying for these guys to look good in front of the fans. The remaining suits belong to the game time production people, the management, and the scouts, the many, many scouts that were there. And here's what I've learned about scouts. The life of a scout isn't nearly as awesome as you would think. As one of the scouts told me, he spends most of his time traveling, staying in horrible hotels and eating junk food, trying to stay in shape as he spends most of his time sitting. He went on to tell me that scouts are a lot like referees. Nobody ever grows up really wanting to be one of them, but when you can't get away from the game and you can't make it into the AHL, the NHL, the minors, wherever you can make a living at it, this is a way to stay around the game, stay around the players, and be a part of the game that you love. I can respect that. The one thing I found comical is that you evidently can't do your job as a scout unless you're wearing a suit that is tailored to the nines. Every single one of these scouts, with the exception of Mike Ricci, yes, that Mike Ricci, who is now at the San Jose Sharks as a scout, was dressed to the nines. These guys looked like GQ models. These guys were not messing around. How does they live out of a backpack as they travel around the world in these small little towns to go watch people and look like that is beyond me, but they pull it off and they do it well. The Avs set the tone in this game with some aggressive, physical play right from the get-go. I really thought I was going to see a skill and speed kind of game, but these guys came out finishing their checks and knocking people on their asses. My eyes were, of course, on the players who were about to crack the Avalanche lineup, including Big Z, Zadorov, Biggie Smalls, B-Graw, Hot Wheels, Rantanen, and JT Comfort, who I don't have a good nickname for yet. So I walked into this with a couple of assumptions, one of them being that Big Z was going to go out there and dominate. And to tell you the truth, he didn't. He kind of walked into this like a fighter who starts a little bit slow. It took him a couple of rounds to get going. It took him getting hit a couple times before he started to hit other people. But once he got going, he was in the game. He held a couple of guys down by their necks for a while until they said uncle, and he got a couple of good shots off. But the one thing with Big Z that I've seen both in the NHL and today is that he'll take chances that puts his other defensive partner in jeopardy. You heard me mention in the conversation with AJ that I think a lot of his success is going to depend on who he's paired with, somebody who's keeping him in line both verbally and also covering his ass when he goes for that big hit somewhere around the goal line in the offensive zone. That exact thing happened a couple of different times, and the big hit definitely was there. I just wonder if that's not going to burn him as he makes his way into the NHL. Some good coaching and a good line mate is probably really going to help. As for my other marks, Biggie Smalls started the game pretty good. B-Graw was running all over the place, but he was staying in his lanes, in his zone, where he should be as a defenseman. He went into the corners, he banged hard, he got knocked down, and he knocked people down. But all through the whole thing, he looked like he was comfortable and like he had done this before. He seemed like a pro, and I think that he's going to be a pro from this point on. B-Graw would score a goal in this game that he would then score again in the next game against the Mighty Ducks. It was the exact same goal where he gets the puck somewhere around the middle of the ice right at the blue line, skates backwards a little bit until a lane opens up in front of the net and puts it top shelf, glove side. The first time I saw him do it, I thought, that's a great shot, maybe a little bit of luck. And then when he did the exact same thing again, and then he did it a couple of other times where he almost scored, I'm starting to see that this guy is as good as people say he is. Maybe it's taken him a little while to develop, but I think that we're going to see him around for quite a while. If there was one guy who everybody was looking to see how he performed today, it was Rantanen, because he should absolutely run this show. He should be making guys fall over and break their ankles as he dekes around them. Rantanen is a big dude who plays like a small guy. He's got moves, and he spends a lot of his time making those moves and avoiding contact. Rantanen's one of those players who kind of surveys the scene, and he never really stops. He just kind of skates around until he bursts into a play. And by the time that he does touch the puck, he has a pretty good idea where it's going, either in the back of the net or setting somebody up for an awesome goal, which he did in this game. Unfortunately, the headline for Mikko Rantanen in the Rookie Showcase is out for 2 to 4 weeks with a sprained ankle. And I have to tell you, I was there, I saw him go down, it looked a lot worse. First he grabbed his knee, and then he grabbed his ankle, and he could hardly get off the ice, and then he was helped off the ice and went to the locker room. Which again, makes me wonder, what really is the point of this? Do we need to have guys like him in this, or should it be people who are really just trying to make a team? Because he's already on the team, and we really don't want him getting hurt before the season even starts. Now, he's out 2 to 4 weeks with a brand new coach and most of his teammates off playing in the World Cup of Hockey. But you know, as Roger says, and I agree, you can't bubble wrap him. You gotta let the boys play hockey. Another player with a lot of confidence and the skill to back it up is JT Compher. With an assist on the Bigra goal and then a killer goal himself where he deked the goalie and went backhand to score the game-winning goal, he looked totally comfortable out there. He didn't look like he was out of his element. He looked like, if anything, he was the most mature guy on the ice with the exception of one guy. Number 42. Sam Hinley. I had never heard of this guy before. Maybe I'm a bad fan for that reason, but I didn't know who he was. He was head and shoulders above the rest, both physically and with his confidence on the ice, his poise, and his leadership. So I did what any good hockey fan should, and I googled the guy, and here's what I found out. It turns out he's been in the AHL for a couple of years. In 2014-15, he was with the Lake Erie Monsters, and then he played for the San Antonio Rampage, and he'll play for them again this year because I don't think we're ever going to see him in the pros. While he's a solid player, in his 130 games, he scored 14 goals, had 11 assists, and has a negative 18 plus minus. That's in the AHL. I don't know if we're ever going to see him called up to the Avs unless they need a body, unless there's a lot of injuries, or unless they just want to give somebody a little, hey, that a boy for playing really good hockey. But in this game, he shined. He was the guy on the ice when it was crazy, when they needed to kill a penalty, and he didn't make any boneheaded plays out there. He was sticking up for his guys, and he was just playing good hockey. I was thoroughly impressed with Sam Hinley. And then there's just one more guy that I want to talk about before we move on to day two. That is number 46, AJ Greer. Or at least he was number 46 for this tournament. AJ Greer was all over the place. He was slashing guys behind the play, he was talking shit, he was giving face washes, and he was playing a good game of hockey. He comes with a skill set. He's not just an agitator, he's an agitator with a skill set that may make the bottom six of the Colorado Avalanche one day. Probably not this day, probably not any day of this season, but in the future I think AJ Greer is a guy who could play for us. He could be a guy that gets under people's skin, yet can score a goal here and there, and can also flip the switch and not take a dumbass penalty. Actually, that remains to be seen, but I think he's got it in him. And moving on to day two. All right, let's be honest. The first day of a tournament is a lot like a first date. You can think a lot of things about somebody that the next day you find out just aren't true. You can wake up and go, what the hell was I thinking? And in a couple of cases, that definitely happened. But for the most part, the Avs only got better. They played less sloppy. And a couple of guys stuck out in the second game that didn't so much in the first game, both for good and bad reasons. Okay, so being the rebels we are, we're going to start backwards. We're not going to start with the good or the bad. We're going to start with the ugly. The ugly came in a 5-minute penalty from Nikita Zadorov, who took a guy into the boards and put an exclamation point where he should have put a period. The guy didn't get up for a while. Zadorov got kicked out of the game, and the Avs had 5 minutes to kill in a close game. Now, you can say a lot of things. You can say he wasn't trying that hard. He was just fucking around. He didn't really care about the game. All the things we talked about in the beginning. But as a human, I come pre-installed with a pattern recognition system. And what I'm seeing in this pattern recognition is that Zadorov takes chances he shouldn't take to make big hits. Maybe it's because he's big. Maybe he thinks that big Z means he has to make big hits. I don't know. But either way, this is going to burn him. This is something he needs to grow up from. This is something that he needs to take out of his game. Because if he's playing a good game and if he's being technical, he's going to have no problem getting the big hits and making the big hits show up on the highlight reels everywhere. He doesn't have to look for them. They're going to find him. That's just the way that he plays. So this is really a habit that he's had through his entire career, and he gets away with it. But making the NHL isn't quite as easy. What got you here isn't going to get you there. And he's going to have to curb this side of his game a little bit to be trusted in tough situations. I don't think that Bednar's going to have a long leash with him on this one. I think he might get one or two chances on this, but if he blows a game because he took a chance he shouldn't have took to make a big play like that, I'm pretty sure he's going to see the AHL again, if nothing more, as just a message. And when it comes to the bad in Game 2, there really wasn't a whole lot of bad outside of that whole Big Z thing. There was quite a bit of guys trying really hard, some guys who were having better success than others, and some guys who were just better hockey players than other guys, but everyone was competing, everyone was trying. Everyone was trying to get to that puck first, and they were battling for it when they did. This is something I want to see, and I totally understand that with guys who are just trying to find a team anywhere. It could be the Avalanche, it could be in the AHL somewhere, it could be anyone in the stands who had a scout there who's going, hey, find me a player who I can drop in here and let's see what happens. So as for calling anyone out for being ugly in this game, I'm going to punt on that one and move straight to the good because there was a lot of good. So let's start net for this one. Spencer Martin was solid. He ended up playing the entire game. And what I saw from him in the second game was a little bit less nerves and a little bit more of his actual game. He likes to come out of the net. He likes to chase that puck and he likes to make that pass that gets somebody set up for a scoring chance, which is exactly what he did more than once. Now it's good to see that. Every now and then I get a little worried when he goes out to dive for a puck that he shouldn't dive for instead of staying in net and getting a good position. He has his moments, there's no doubt about it, but the guy is competing, the guy is doing what he thinks is going to put his team ahead, and I like that. This tournament being about rookies and prospects and the possibility of playing in the NHL, I'm going to go on record and say I don't think that Spencer Martin's ever going to do that on a consistent basis. He may come up to back somebody up if there's an injury or if the expansion draft bites us in the ass, but other than that, I think he's going to be an AHL guy and he's going to be a good one at that. Chase Marchand, who did actually make an appearance in the first game, he came in with about 8 minutes left in the second period on a over-the-boards kind of goalie swap thing. Played a really good game. I really liked the way that he moved in the net, and I liked the way that he looked around players. There were some big dudes on the ice, and he was looking over them and under them and making the right plays. I have no idea where he came from, no idea where he's going, but he looked good in this particular tournament. All right, moving on. Mason Gearston looked pretty damn good in this game, and not just because he had a fight with another guy and knocked his helmet off and pretty much won the fight, but because he played a good game. He had his head up, he was looking around, and he was focused. Sure, he made a couple plays that were maybe a little bit questionable or where he got beat, but not many, and they were all good hockey plays. It's things that happen in a hockey game. He had a good showing, and I think that there might be a future for him yet. We'll see. Chris Bigras, or Biggie Smalls as I call him, had a great tournament altogether, really. I mean, he went into the boards, he took hits, he gave hits, but he never really got out of position, and he was always looking to move that puck, like I said before, north and south. He is looking to get the puck in the other end, where he's also effective as an offensive defenseman. This is a guy I like a lot, and I think he'll definitely be with the Avs. We'll see what happens in the expansion draft, or if he's a guy that becomes trade bait if we get good enough on the D-line. But as far as his play and what he can bring to the team, I really like him. So maybe it was just me, or maybe it was the fact that JT Compher was wearing Drury's first number, number 37, and he looks a lot like Drury to me. He's a guy who has a real good upside. I mean, he's not quite the skilled player, but he's good. He's poised. He doesn't ever seem out of place. He doesn't ever seem overwhelmed. He's a guy who can score when it needs to be scored, and I would go so far as to say that he is clutch. I really hope that he gets a chance sooner than later to show what he's got in the NHL, and I think it might turn out well for him. The last guy that I want to talk about who really stuck out for me was Nicholas Meloche. His family was there, by the way. Very nice people sitting in the stands. And he played a really good game, too. He's actually a better player than I thought he was. He's been around for a while in the conversations about prospects, but I never really expected much from him. Just another guy who was going to kind of be a name that never developed. But in this game, he showed me that he's a real hockey player. I don't know if he'll make the NHL or not. I don't know if it would be at the Avs, but there is something behind him, and it was really fun to watch him play and watch him compete out there. And for those of you who don't know, who didn't make it to the tournament, the Avs won the tournament by winning two of their three games, which makes them awesome, which makes them better than the California teams, which makes me happy. A huge thanks to AJ for taking the time to sit with me in a bar and try to do a podcast while listening to 1980s music and eating fried food. It was a good time. We should do more of it. There's a few more podcasts coming up that will be on location with really cool people. Hopefully those have a little bit less music in the background. And as always, thanks for being awesome, especially all the people that I met at the Rookie Showcase. This and every other podcast that we do is brought to you by AvsFam, AvsFam.com. Go check them out. Really awesome shirts, really good deals, really fair price, and stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else. As a matter of fact, there's a few shirts that are becoming extinct. Think Ryan O'Reilly here. Go check them out. There's a couple new shirts coming out. And also, ladies, we heard you. There's going to be some tank tops out there. Or if you're a guy who can rock a lady's tank top, hey, more power to you. Stay awesome.